prison. You know, I found myself at one time being down in Railway Prison, and that was after coming out of the military. I was in the service for about 8 years, and I was a drill sergeant. I was in the 82nd Airborne Division, and I was in the 1st Ranger Battalion for a year and a half. So I had a promising career going, but that career came to an end because of my alcohol and drug use.
Wow. You could write a book. You could absolutely write a book.
In fact, I'm in the process of
writing. I hope so, sir, because that is just amazing. That is just amazing. My goodness. All right, Mr. King has thrown a whole bunch of stuff at me. I'm going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and kind of break all that down, and we'll be right back with more of Good Morning Honey on Chamber FM.
I'm Dave Lang with Insight Financial Services and a proud member of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. I believe that our participation in all of the opportunities that the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce offers to its members strongly contributes to our success.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce is a Forward New Jersey Coalition member.
For too long in America, we've been putting off funding infrastructure, saying we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. But on August 1st, 2007, hundreds of vehicles tried crossing the I-35 bridge in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and disaster struck. The I-35 bridge collapsed. 13 people were killed, 145 were injured, and traffic was obstructed for over a year. It didn't have to happen. Years before, inspectors had rated the bridge structurally deficient, but they were ignored. In New Jersey, we have 479 bridges carrying 8.2 million vehicles a day that are rated worse, and we can't afford to ignore that. As of June 30th, the state's Transportation Trust Fund will be empty. We need to replenish it so that our roads and bridges can be fixed and future problems prevented. And we can. Go to ForwardNewJersey.com to find out how. Paid for by Forward New Jersey.
Welcome back to Good Morning Hunterdon and HoomShamberReady.com. I have Glenn King, Executive Director of Freedom House, and Dawn Mill, the Director of Marketing and Development, with me today. And Mr. King, that story is just amazing, and we talked a little bit off air about it's just that book needs to be written, absolutely 100%, and I don't know if it's going to make a movie or anything, but it's that alone is just going to be incredible. But so now you obviously relate to it personally because of your trajectory through Freedom House. How does an individual get referred to Freedom House? How do they learn about it? And I imagine that there's a very small group of people that you can only handle at one time. So how do you make that determination as to who should be showing up at your doorstep?
Yes, we have 41 beds. Mm-hmm. So there is an assessment process. Mm-hmm. Now, how we get referrals are from various sources. We get them from the criminal justice system. We get them from family and friends. We get them from other rehabilitation centers. We get them from folks looking at the internet, our website. And that's where the referrals come from. After they are referred to Freedom House, we do an assessment process, which starts at a phone screen. This first contact is usually made over the phone. Someone may call, or they may even walk in, and we'll do a screening. After we've done a screening, we'll do a more comprehensive assessment. Mm-hmm. And based on that assessment, we can tell whether or not we need to replace them in our inpatient program. And I failed to mention that we also have an outpatient program as well.
Okay. Wow. All right. So you make that determination as to whether that individual needs to be inpatient, means that they're staying at the homes, the residences.
Yes. They will be staying at the residence. And it's based on what we call the ASAM criteria. American Society of Addiction Medicine has a placement criteria, and it's just if you broke your leg and the bone was sticking out, you would probably not go home that day. You'd probably stay inside the hospital.
Right.
But if it was just a broken bone, you could pretty much maybe put a cast on it, and you can probably send them. You could send them home.
Mm-hmm.
Where, so it's based on the severity of the person's addiction, just like it would be based on the severity of an injury.
Sure.
If someone was injured. Sure.
So you're going to make that determination, you and your counselors, after some type of review.
Yes.
Now, when I asked you about what Freedom House is, you gave me a pretty large summary, and I'm going to drill down a little bit. When somebody arrives, you obviously have to take them through a process. Now, there's that stereotypical 12-step process that we know percentages work only in a minor percentage. That's not what you guys do. Right, it's the concept of getting somebody rehabilitated through Freedom House is you're trying to deal with their entire environment. So let's touch on that a little bit. When they're in the home, residential home, what are the types of programs and education you're providing them?
Well, we do utilize 12-step recovery, but that's only a support mechanism.
Right.
We have individuals that come in that have no basic living skills. They have no way of coping with their addiction.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting young folks in a program now that never had a job before.
Right.
So in some instances, you're doing habilitation, not rehabilitation. They're being introduced maybe to work for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Like myself, I had a job before, so it was just getting reconnected to that.
Right.
And there's a lot of folks that we're reconnecting to some of the basic living skills, and some never had those basic living skills, and they're getting them for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have maybe employment skills that we teach them, how to go out and seek and maintain full-time employment. We have them to learn how to cook, for the first time, and some maybe come in that had prior jobs as chefs, or maybe had their own restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
We,
so you basically see the drug and alcohol behavior is a symptom of something deeper, that they really never could take care of themselves, and so you're trying to solve that problem before you get to the drug and drug and alcohol rehabilitation.
Absolutely. I think that the when it's all said and done, drugs and alcohol are only a symptom of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So what we deal with the whole person. We try to take a more holistic approach.
Right.
Somewhere in that person's life, they picked up drugs and alcohol for some reason, because it did something for them. Meaning, for example, you could have a person that may be dealing with abandonment issues.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't deal with the root of that abandonment issue, that person will eventually we may mask it by having them to go out and get a job and sit in groups and do certain things.
Right.
But sooner or later, if that root issue is not dealt with, then they're probably going to return to do what they always did.
Sure, sure. So now, in addition, you're teaching them basic skills in their home, trying to give them, get them a job, and you also talked about how when they're earning that money, they're kind of paying their way for living at Freedom House for a while, but they're also saving money for after their departure. What type of jobs, what type of businesses are you introducing them to, and how are you soliciting and getting a buy-in from those businesses?
A lot of jobs depend on the skill level.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of jobs are obtained because people believe in what we do. There's some folks that still don't believe in what we do, so they won't give our guys an opportunity.
Right.
Unfortunately, with the alcoholic or drug addict or the recovering person, a lot of times there's been a criminal element to it, and it's usually related to drugs and or alcohol. But we get some organizations that that understand, and they're willing to give our guys a chance.
Mm-hmm.
So the skill level is based on the individual and what types of job they get. It depends on a lot of times on who's going to give them a chance.
Right.
I try to tell the guys when they first come into treatment, do not worry about getting the job, get a job.
Right.
Meaning, do not try to focus so much on your career, what you want to be doing down the road a piece, but focus more now and getting into the routine of getting up in the morning, going back to work. If you're working for the first time, you're being introduced to it. If you've been away from it, you're getting reunited to going back into the workforce. So mm-hmm. it varies.
Yeah, no, it's now. In addition to that, I'm going to make a small leap here. That there is an additional stigma of men who are afflicted with drug and alcohol addiction compared to women. I believe you have an extra step that you have to achieve to convince folks that men can be introduced into the workforce. Do you find that? Is that something that you're struggling with, or you have to make up that extra ground? Because certain shelters, I've heard, will not take men. They'll only take women.
Well, I think that in society as a whole, men and women are looked at differently when they're affected by drugs and alcohol and abuse.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, I think when the children are taken out of the home, they usually refer to as she lost her children.
Right.
Well, the man lost his children too, and I think we need to hold men equally responsible for their role in the family as well as the woman. So they lost their children, and the man should be responsible, have to pay bills, and be part of that reuniting process as well. And I think a lot of times people will be more sympathetic towards a woman in addiction versus a man in addiction. But I think that it affects both evenly, and I think we need to hold both the man and the woman responsible, and we need to provide support for the men as well as the women. So yes, there is some stigma around stigma.
Yeah. Now you said you had 41 beds. Now, you don't have it all in one building, right? You have a number of different houses that you maintain?
Well, we have 41 beds in our residential facility.
Mm-hmm.
And we have two transitional houses, actually three transitional houses for men as well. So when they finish treatment
at the 41,
they can go into transitional living, which is a step down. There is no treatment at the transitional house. Those are for men who need additional support after they finish treatment.
Right.
They can't afford to get out and pay $10, $11, $1,200 a month rent.
Sure.
So we have transitional living houses where they can live in a peer-supported environment, and they can save additional funds and perhaps have them go into an outpatient program such as the Freedom House outpatient. So we have those transition living houses, and one in Morristown, New Jersey, one in Mansfield, and one in Glen Gardner.
Okay. Wow. All right. So Morristown, obviously, a little bit more urban. Glen Gardner's got some opportunity. But
yes.
You're struggling with some transportation issues, I would imagine, as well.
Transportation is
yeah. I mean, Hunterdon County, all of Hunterdon County struggle.
And, you know, that's what a lot of things our funding sources, I think, don't fail to realize.
Mm-hmm.
That unlike some programs that are located in your urban areas, they can utilize public transportation. But
right.
We've borne an additional cost because of the transportation that we provide. We take these guys to the 12-step recovery meetings 2 to 3 nights per week. We take them to work. We pick them up from work.
Right.
If there's an additional court proceeding they have to go to, we take them to court. So there is a transportation issue. We try to utilize the local link, but a lot of times because of timing,
sure.
It doesn't work out.
No.
These guys are up in the morning at 4 o'clock, and 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning going to work.
Yeah. No, it's a tough game. Now, what's the time frame? And I imagine it's different for each type of individual. But what's the expected time frame, and what is the intensity of which you are providing this type of education to a resident that shows up?
The average person is at Freedom House nowadays, so anywhere from between 6 and 9 months.
Wow.
And it depends on the individual, because it's not time based; it's based on goal achievement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when that person achieves the goals that are set in their treatment plan,
mm-hmm.
then we can move them through the continuum of a care, so to speak. Freedom House is a very intense program. When these guys get up in the morning, they get up around 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning. They go to work.
Right.
For those that are not working, they're working around the house all day, attending group sessions,
right.
Doing chores around the house. When the guys return home from work, which is around 6:30 in the evening, they eat dinner together. Those that are not working, they will prepare dinner for those who are working. So those who don't have any cooking skills at all, we put them in the kitchen with some that do, and they learn how to cook.
Mm-hmm.
For those who go out to work, they come back to a nice meal, after which they will go out to maybe a 12-step recovery meeting or get involved with individual counseling or group counseling.
Mm-hmm.
By the time they shut it down, it's probably somewhere around 9:30 at night.
Yeah.
So it was a very, very rigid day. We got a very tight, no-nonsense, but sympathetic or compassionate program, I should say. And it's tough. It's probably one of the toughest things some of these guys are going
to
ever do.
And it's evidence-based. You're not going to let them move on out or until you see the goals being achieved.
Yes.
So what's your percentage of recovery and success?
I want to say about 45%, 45 to 47% of the individuals come through make it through treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Of those who do make it through treatment, there's probably somewhere around, I think it's a 96% to 97% success rate, and that's based on graduate surveys that we send out. We do those on a yearly basis.
Right.
So for those who do go through the program and make it through, there's a high percentage that they'll continue to stay right. sober. And those that do stay sober are those that normally stay connected to the things that we've taught them and stay involved with what's going on at Freedom House, things that are going on in the community, stay active.
So the original 46%, the ones that they're just departing, it's too grueling, it's too tough, and they're just not committed. That's pretty much what you're telling me. But the ones that do make it all the way through, that's where the 96% achievement of success is coming from.
Yes,
yeah, there you go. It's a tough game. I've talked about this in a number of different situations where you're trying to change a tremendous amount about a person's and that person's life. So if they're not committed and they're not really buying into the whole situation, they're just not going to put up with it, pretty much. But
right.
when they do, obviously you're achieving success. So that's how grueling it is. So we've learned about how much intensity and care and residential needs are required. You have how many? What's your staff numbers over there?
We have four counselors and a clinical director that compose the clinical staff.
Right.
We also have a facility manager that oversees all of the logistical parts of the program. That person oversees the inpatient treatment as well as the transitional houses. We also have support staff of about 12.
Wow. So you have all that staff. You have 41 potential people that are living in the home, and then you have the transitional ones, and you have to maintain those homes. You have to maintain the business. That's where all the financing comes from, and obviously you're a nonprofit. So how do we achieve all that? Which brings in Dawn. Dawn Nill is the marketing and development director. And so, Dawn, we're trying to achieve a budget to make all this go. So you've come in 6 weeks ago. It's always a challenge, is it not?
Yes, it's always a challenge, and there's so many not worthy nonprofits out there, and you know, donors have become very sophisticated, which is a good thing. And you mentioned before the recession, and you know, in our field, we're seeing that donors are, you know, being more cautious where they are putting their money and want to see impact and outcome.
Right. So now we're looking for fundraising ways to achieve this. One of them happens to be the 5K walk and run, right? That's the official name. And that's taking place on May 9th?
Correct.
So what are you looking for at this point? You're obviously looking for people to participate on that day. So
absolutely.
How do we get involved?
Well, it is the day before Mother's Day, so the weather is getting beautiful out there, so
yes.
We hope that people will come out with their moms, with their kids, with their entire families, their dogs, come out and walk and run on Saturday, May 9th, and you can pre-register by visiting our website, or you can actually even show up that morning out at Spruce Run Recreation Area and sign up and join us.
So when somebody shows up, what's the game plan? There's a competitive part to this as well?
We are a sanctioned race
with
the USATF, and it is a certified course. So those hardcore runners out there, these will count Also, we're a Grand Prix race, mm-hmm. and so you can earn points towards some merchandise also through right. the USATF.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, most importantly, it's raising funds to help our family afterward, which is our women's program.
Okay. Is there sponsorships as well?
Absolutely.
Okay. What goes
so
on?
There are sponsorship opportunities. We are coming up closely to the deadline, so please consider this week reaching out to us.
Mm-hmm.
There are sponsorships starting at $100 to get your name on the back of the race t-shirt, all the way up to being the title sponsor at a range of $5,000.
Okay. So we have all those opportunities there. And so you could be part of the 5K race, or you could be just go out and do a nice little walk and register to do that and enjoy the day and perhaps, earn, like you said, earn some points for the racing. It's not the only fundraiser you folks do, right?
No, it is not. We do also have a golf outing that will be taking place on Wednesday, July 15th.
Okay.
At Fiddler's Elbow, so mark your calendars also for that,
mm-hmm.
and circle back to us. It'll be a beautiful event, also raising some funds. And if, you know, you're not a golfer, you're not a walker, you're not a runner, there's multiple opportunities to support the organization, writing a check, introducing us to your corporation. We do take matching gifts.
Mm-hmm.
Also, if you happen to be part of a family foundation, we would love to speak to you about that also.
Yep. It's a for more of a legacy or an estate type donation as well. Very neat. What type of budget are you working with, Mr. King, to try and achieve all this?
Are you asking about annual budget?
Yeah. I mean, you're trying to achieve a tremendous amount with 41 people. I don't need, you know, specific dollars and cents, but it's just an amount. I just find it an amazing amount of money that you need to capture and maintain in order to do what you do and make it successful. So you have a foundation, right, in addition to the Freedom House. So there's two separate organizations, right?
Yeah. It takes a lot to put someone through treatment. In fact,
sure.
what typically paid by the state to put an individual through is not enough.
Right.
So we have to do additional fundraising activities in order to make the program a success.
Yeah.
So it does take a lot, and we need all the support that we can get.
Mm-hmm. Are there grants out there that you guys are able to capture, or is that kind of drying up? And I ask that only because I just don't know how much the public, or the governmental organizations, the institutional organizations, are they understand that there's an epidemic here, but we've been talking about this issue for so long. I just wonder if they just hear it as white noise. Do you get involved, or do you see the same amount of grants available to you that you did years ago?
I see less grants.
Yeah,
I see less money coming from the government, but I see more demands being put on the dollars that we do get.
Mm.
So much that some organizations are being regulated or forced out of business.
Mm-hmm.
But we definitely want to see Freedom House continue to flourish and do the things that we've been doing for the past 29 years.
Mm.
I'm sure there's another Glenn King out there who's been in and out of institutions, suffering from the grips of addiction, and I'd like to see that individual get the same opportunity that I had.
When you do the movie rights for your bio, you'll be able to cover it all soon. I see. I've been reading, and it's coming out all the time. The world of drug and alcohol addiction is changing. We now have the ability to get cheaper adulterated heroin compared to the fad of the 1990s and late early 2000s was crack and cocaine. Do you change your education, and is it a harder thing to achieve to get folks in that are coming in with that addiction versus cocaine habit versus an alcohol habit?
Well, for one, the kids are a lot younger that are coming into treatment, so we have to change our treatment approach.
Right.
There's an ability to you have to have the ability to determine where that person is at. They are moving through different stages of change, and a lot of times they come in, they are not even contemplating changes. So we have to meet that individual where they're at.
Right.
And it's very challenging, but we're able to do it now. What I see is the drugs have become more addictive. For instance, the heroin that they have out now is a lot more addictive, and a lot of it is it's not just heroin that they're putting in these drugs. There's a lot of other drugs that are packaged along with the heroin. I had an individual that come tell me, says, "Glenn, you know, they tested me for heroin, and a lot of other drugs came up." He says, "And I didn't take none of those drugs that they say I took." But actually, he did, because it's crap that's being put into it to hook that person.
Wow.
Even the marijuana that's out nowadays is a lot more stronger than it was, back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm seeing that kids are a lot younger using drugs. I had heard a story of someone who was 12 or 13 years old that was in a detox from heroin.
Oh my!
In my opinion, this kid should have been someplace sucking on a lollipop, but he's using he's using heroin.
But he was in an environment that was making that available to him.
An environment that made it available. I tell parents when I go out and do my talk to make sure you know what's in your medicine cabinet.
Oh yeah.
A lot of times it starts with the medicine cabinet. Sometimes it starts with maybe a sports injury, and you have maybe doctors that probably should be a little more educated and receive a lot more curriculum when they go through school on addictions, because you'll be surprised that a lot are not very well educated, or I don't know if they're concerned or not, but it's a problem.
I talk about that pretty regularly here, because we talk about the drop boxes that are available. I would go as far as to say that it might not be the parents' medicine cabinet, but it could be the grandma and grandpa's medicine cabinet.
Absolutely.
Because there's a lot of expired stuff hanging out there, and grandma and grandpa, uncle, aunt, are not keeping tabs on that stuff. So a kid can go into a bathroom over there, load their pockets, leave the vials there, and they're making all sorts of crazy cocktails nowadays with these.
And I heard of these kids that have gone to what we call a farm party, and when I first heard they're having a farm party, I'm thinking that they're having it someplace on someone's farm next to the barn.
Right.
But what they were actually talking about was a pharmacology party.
PHARM.
Right, PH. And they actually take all of these drugs and put them into one bowl, just all types of drugs, and you don't know what you're taking. Take a handful and take them. And that is the most insane thing.
You don't know what you're doing.
You don't know what you're doing.
Oh my. This is the other issue that I imagine, which is driving this. Because they're stealing them, we're not dealing with a lot of money anymore. It used to be that cocaine and marijuana and crack was expensive.
Yes.
But now we're getting it at a lot cheaper rate, if not free, because we're just flat out stealing it. So it's becoming more prevalent in younger kids.
More prevalent in younger kids. They start off maybe taking these pills that are a lot expensive. If you're coming off an injury, pills can cost $15,
$25,
whereas you can get a bag of heroin for maybe $5. So it's a lot cheaper.
Crazy. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more of Glenn King and Dan Mill. We'll be right back.
This is psychic medium Trish Woods. with the program Afterlife Real Life that airs every Thursday from 1 to 3 p.m. My co-host is psychic medium Jane Davidson from the United Kingdom. We have listeners and callers from all over the world. We're looking forward to hearing what you want to know about with metaphysics, spirituality, personal spirit experiences, psychic work, and more. From 1 to 3 p.m. every Thursday, you can call in or tune in, asking Jane and I your questions, your personal ideas, and maybe getting help with your own personal life. Afterlife Real Life, every Thursday, 1 to 3 p.m.
Hi, I'm Joe Peters of Weichert Realtors. Buying or selling a property can be one of the most expensive undertakings you face in your lifetime. And selecting the right realtor to help you through this process can dramatically affect your success or your failure. I have personally helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through this process in achieving their dreams and goals in 100 in Somerset County areas over the past 10 years. I believe that this experience should be a smooth, seamless one for you and not a roller coaster ride. But the best judgment as to whether or not I deliver this to my customers is their reactions in their own words.
One of the things we liked about Joe was that he would return calls within minutes if he wasn't able to pick up.
You know, Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless.
How do I accomplish this? By approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, I try to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them my own. Then, I go out and take the mass amounts of data that we have and distill them down to a few understandable action points to be considered. Finally, I control the entire process through technology to ensure that we're not going to hit any speed bumps along the way. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let me show you how to take my level of professional expertise and put it to work for you in achieving your real estate goals and dreams. I can be reached at 908-238-0118. Thanks for your time.
Welcome back to Good Morning, Hunterdon. I'm Jim DeRayer-Con. Glenn King, Executive Director of Freedom House of New Jersey, and Dawn Mill, Director of Marketing and Development, is with me talking about Freedom House and the upcoming charity events. Mr. King, your story is remarkable. But I imagine because you have 96% success rate that there's many more out there that you've experienced. What kind of other achievements can we count on from the past?
Well, I'm just one of many. We have folks that have completed treatment that went on to hold a seat on Wall Street. We have licensed electricians, licensed plumbers. We've had people that had that have businesses as contractors, IT people. So there are many, many success stories out there. We've trained at Freedom House at least five other people that have become certified alcohol and drug counselors in the state of New Jersey.
So they're using their own experience as being that specific to help others. That's awesome.
Absolutely. So what we do at Freedom House, we take tax burdens and make taxpayers out of them.
Amazing. That's an amazing story all the way around. You brought this up earlier, and I blew it. I wanted to get back to it, so I'm going to do it now. You talked about, in addition to the men and the men residential programs, there's another program that deals with women and women and their children. Can you just go through a little bit about how that differs from the male residential treatment?
Yes, that program is called the Family Afterward.
Mm-hmm.
And it's for women who have a case with the Division of Youth and Family Services and Protective Services.
Right.
They may be in jeopardy of losing their children without the proper case management and housing. They may never be reunited with their children. What we do at Freedom House, we provide intensive case management for that mother and their child and go to the Division of Youth and Family and Protective Services,
mm-hmm.
and the courts and advocate for them after the period of time they've been stable and after supervision and, like I said, intense case management,
right.
for them to get their children back.
So that still involves potentially a drug and alcohol addiction, but it's causing them to be considered to lose or foster care of their families.
Yes.
So you're still working on, you're still using your expertise and your skills, but you're now using it for another reason and another target. Is that right?
Absolutely. And the women that come through the Family Afterward program are typically stable before they get there. They're not under the influence of any alcohol and drugs.
Okay.
They usually have completed a short-term or a long-term program. So by the time they get to us, they usually have anywhere from 3 to 6 months of sobriety.
Uh-huh. So you're taking the transition, houses instead of the actual residential.
Yes.
Okay. And now at this point, they're with their families.
Some are with their children, and some are not. Some bring their children with them, mm-hmm. and some they have visitation rights, so may be supervised by the state of New Jersey.
Right.
But after a period of time, if what we do is successful, then they are reunited with their children and then allowed to live in the home with their children.
Right. Now, I didn't bring this up before, but I guess I'm curious. Is anybody from the state of New Jersey can show up and be referred to you? Or is it just locally to Huntington County?
Well, anyone throughout the state of New Jersey. We have state funding. We get county funding.
Mm-hmm.
We also have some people that call from the other side of the country, and they will have to be either.
You have that reputation.
Yes, we do.
Nice.
We've been in operation for almost 30 years now.
Mm-hmm. 30 years now, and you were there in 1990, so you were there at the beginning.
Yeah,
pretty close to the beginning.
I think Freedom House is definitely in my blood. You know. Cut myself and Freedom House comes up.
Wow.
I've been for quite a while.
Unbelievable. It's quite a remarkable story, Mr. King. I appreciate everything you've explained to us. And obviously, it's a viable program. I love the fact that it's evidence-based. That's the real key, that you guys are working on making sure that the goals are achieved as opposed to a time frame. And I have some anecdotal personal experiences that I've seen people go through other types of programs, not necessarily drug and alcohol, but the medical profession and the insurance companies drive it from a time-oriented, and that doesn't win. We don't succeed that way. So the fact that you are able to take folks and drive them through on an evidence-based, you don't move and you don't graduate and you don't transition until we see it, and the integrity of the program maintains and the reputation maintains as well. So it's obviously very important. It's successful, and it obviously needs a lot of funding. So how do people get in touch with you, A, to be referred to, B, to do charitable causes, C, to just get more information about Freedom House for the sake of getting your name out there? What's the contact information they should use?
So you can visit our website at www.freedomhousenj.org.
Mm-hmm.
You can call our foundation office, and we'll be happy to speak to you at 908-617-5492. And we're always looking for boots-on-the-ground type volunteers to help us maybe provide some skills for our residents, help with a special event.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, please reach out to us. Also, we have a Facebook page, okay. Freedom House New Jersey,
yep.
And so come out and like us on Facebook.
Awesome. You guys are a great story. I'm so glad we had this opportunity to bring you all down here. Love to keep doing this and keep telling us about these great stories, Mr. King. And once again, once you get your book and your movie deal, I think Freedom House is going to be taken care of pretty well. Well, obviously, just because you're there, it's all we're doing it. One last time, Don, with the 5K race, so make people have understanding of what they need to do real quick.
So, Saturday,
yep.
May 9th, pre-register online, visit our website,
mm-hmm.
or you can come out that day. Registration starts at 7:30, and the race and the walk start at 9 a.m. at the Spruce Run Recreation Center.
Awesome. Appreciate it, as always. Great work from you, too, and thank you so much for everything that you guys are doing to help our community with drug and alcohol awareness and putting people back into the system and taking them off of our tax rolls. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for having us.
Vince Arnolino says, never say I should have. Well, if you are somebody that is afflicted with drug and alcohol addiction, perhaps you need to give these folks a call. If you feel like you would like to help out in some manner, shape, or form, certainly give them a call as well or contact them. Rotary Hour is up next. You've been listening to Good Morning Hamilton and HamiltonBarrier.com. My thank you to Michelle Heidi, Al Rohr, Glenn King, and Don Mill for their contributions to the show. I'll be back again tomorrow morning, same time, same place. You've been listening to Good Morning Hamilton on HamiltonBarrier.com.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big Z coming to you from HunterdonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good Morning, Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic, and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HunterdonChamberRadio.com.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Headline News. I'm Ron Taylor. Donald Trump is weighing in on the 2016 presidential race, which is heating up. Trump tells Fox News, Fox and Friends, that he wasn't a fan of Hillary Clinton's announcement.
I don't think that's what we're all about. I don't think it's appropriate that people announce over the internet or social media or any other way. I think you have to stand in front of a microphone and you have to say to the press and everybody else that wants to be there that you're running for president.
Trump also touched on Republican Marco Rubio, who is expected to make his announcement later today. The Affordable Care Act is achieving its goal of cutting the number of Americans without health insurance coverage. A Gallup HealthWays Well-Being Index poll released today shows the nation's uninsured rate is now just below 12%. That's the lowest uninsured figure since Gallup started tracking the number in 2008. Gas prices are continuing to drop. The latest Lundberg survey shows the average price of regular gasoline fell by about 5 cents in the past 3 weeks to $2.45 a gallon. This is USA Headline News.
This is a special broadcast. At 4:10 p.m. today, I died, and yet here I am. Why? I am a messenger of God.
This Friday.
This is the beginning.
A star fell from heaven, changed us, and gave us a new destiny. Stop the devil himself.
Wait, you mean like the devil?
The end will begin.
We're the angels of the apocalypse.
The Messengers, series premiere Friday on the CW.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, U.S. Tax Shield can help you take back control. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Our team of tax attorneys can stop collections and get you protected. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the BBB, so call 800-479-2697. U.S. Tax Shield, 800-479-2697.
Some environmentalists are upset that California Governor Brown's mandatory water restrictions do not include oil and gas exploration. Patrick Sullivan with the Center for Biological Diversity says the oil industry is using some 2 million gallons of water a day for fracking.
Much of that water is contaminated and taken out of the water cycle for good.
Sullivan says most fracking in California uses fresh water that could otherwise be used for drinking or farming. He also says the water situation has become so severe that in some cases, farmers are using oil operations' wastewater on their crops. Patrick Sullivan with the Center for Biological Diversity says California doesn't have effective rules regulating water use by the industry.
There are now some rules requiring disclosure of where they're getting water for fracking and what they're doing with wastewater after they're done.
High wire artist Nick Wallenda is in New York City to reveal his next death-defying stunt. The King of the High Wire will announce his next feat at a press conference set for 11 a.m. Eastern Time. This is USA Headline News.
Would you wait several days for your shower to get hot? Would you wait several days to feel the full effect of relief from your nasal congestion? Flonase Allergy Relief Nasal Spray could take that long. But if you're congested now and you want powerful relief now, use Afrin No Drip. Afrin starts working in seconds and keeps working for 12 hours. So why wait several days to feel the full effect? You can start to get relief in seconds with Afrin. Afrin, powerful congestion relief without the wait. Use as directed.
A leading medical group is called...
The worst foreign policy blunder in the history of this country.
Clinton defends her judgment, saying New York voters voted for her twice. This is USA Radio News.
Hi, it's Angie Austin. Okay, seriously, I kid you not. My hair has been a problem since I was a teenager. Thin and limp and just blah looking. And now my hair has never looked better. So I want to tell you about Ovation products because I love them. And with Mom's Day around the corner, I want to tell you about a Mother's Day gift set that comes with a new...
Annoying. Unless you have deductions. Lots. Yeah.
It's very complicated. It's pages and pages and pages and pages. And you have to have somebody help you with them. You can't even...